Hi, thank you for joining me for this new podcast, Racial Equity in Healthcare. I'm David Crowell, and I'll be your host. Each episode will open our hearts and minds to learn from the stories of others. Sometimes we'll learn what racial inequity in healthcare looks like. Other times we'll learn how to see our own biases. I'm sure we'll talk about humanity instead of race in the human spirit that we all share. One thing we're not going to do is shame and blame. That doesn't help anyone. And that brings me to something that neonatologist, pediatric cardiologist, and surgeon Dr. Chip Martin shared. Please listen to him talk about how we all have work to do and how we can all help each other. Take a listen.
So for years, it seemed that our approach was diversity. If we simply have more brown and black people in more mainstream lines of employment, areas of obvious engagement in our communities, if there's just more of us around, kind of this osmosis of understanding and acceptance will occur. And I think that we now see that that hasn't moved the needle enough. It hasn't changed people's perceptions, people's own ideas of who brown and black people are. And so it dawned on me that if you think about America, how the fabric of America, how the creation of America really started with its original sin of slavery and deciding that people could be considered chattel property and less than human, you know, the three-fifths compromise. So even though those great words of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness didn't apply to, you know, 13, 14 million people that were subjugated and brought here against their will, it never applied to them. And I think that toxic milieu of racism and white supremacy, and again, we have to be clear, folks told themselves that Africans that they brought here were subhuman. They were less than human. They had thicker skin. They didn't feel pain. They didn't eat as much food. They didn't need as much sleep. They could work harder in the hot sun. All of these things. They were animals. And so it assuaged their consciousness. So when they did evil things to these people, brutal things to these people, broke up their families, lynched them, beat them, maimed them, they said, "But it's okay because they're not human." And those types of feelings and thoughts have continued to move through. Slavery went away, but then Jim Crow came, and then the KKK came, and all these things that have permeated us and have just saturated all of our souls with the concepts of racism and white supremacy. And we all feel it. It is not just it's not just white folks. It's not just brown folks. It's everyone in this country. All 328 million of us have breathed in that toxic milieu. And so if we think about our innermost soul, the place in us where if our soul was a garden, and that garden blooms wonderful flowers of love and kindness and respect and grace and charity, those flowers might bloom beautifully in our gardens, but we always have those weeds of racism that are also in our garden. They get fertilization on a daily basis when we are bombarded with white supremacists and toxic racist ideology that fertilizes those weeds. And what we have to do, rather than an idea of just diversity, we have to start with ourselves, and we have to look at the garden of our soul, and not only identify a weed of racism. Oh, that's a racist thought. Oh, that's a racist action. Oh, that's a racist belief. You have to then pull that weed out of your garden. You have to take it out. You have to actively weed your garden. And one, we can all not blame each other. We all have gardens and we all have weeds in them. If you're a gardener, every gardener knows you always have weeds. They always crop back up. And if you ignore that weed, too, if you ignore that weed, it can grow taller. It can send down deeper and more tenacious roots that makes it even harder for you to pull it out later. And third, that weed might overgrow your garden and overshadow those other flowers of love and kindness and respect and grace that we want to grow fuller in the garden of our soul. So if we can identify and pull those weeds out and help those around us to identify the weeds in their gardens when they say something racist, when they act in a less than charitable fashion against someone who's brown or black, we can help them say, hey, that's a weed in your garden. That's a racist thought that you should pluck out. If we can all agree that we all have those weeds and we can all help each other tend the gardens of our souls and be the gardeners for each other, that might take us further along. It's only at that moment when we can, I think, really move the needle. I think that it's crucial that people want to engage into it. And that's what I think we're seeing after the George Floyd murder, is that it seems like people are now wanting to engage and actually think about the garden of their souls and say, well, I'm not racist. Nope, I'm not saying that anymore. Where is my racist thought? How do I address it? So I think that we might be on a path now of people identifying those weeds within the gardens of their soul and may be ready to start pulling them out.
What Dr. Martin expressed is so full of love. Weeding the gardens of our souls. We all have them, weeds and souls. With introspection and intention, let's pull the weeds one at a time. Next time on Racial Equity in Healthcare, we'll listen to dermatologist and leader of CentraCare's Rural Health Division, Dr. Cindy Ferkins-Smith. Dr. Ferkins-Smith will share her insights on growing up in rural Iowa, discovering the weeds in her garden, and what dermatologists have to say about the color of our skin. Until then, this is David Crowell. Be well.